This episode is brought to you by charlottesgotalot.com. The Queen City is a food lover's paradise and hosts hundreds of incredible events throughout the year, including the International Symposium on Bread. Plan your trip at charlottesgotalot.com.
This is Jimmy Carboni, the host of Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. I've been a part of the HRN community for 10 years. After all that time, I'm constantly inspired by the incredible voices of our network. Each week, I record my show in the HRN studio because I'm excited to bring you, our listeners, the most important stories from the world of beer, food, cider, and more. All of us here at HRN make food radio because we love it. This year, HRN is celebrating its 10th anniversary, but we need your support to keep food radio going strong for the next decade. Join the HRN community today by becoming a member. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate right now. You can even show some love for my show by selecting Beer Sessions in the designation drop-down menu. Thanks for listening to HRN. Hey, hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, guys, I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host here, and it's July 30th, 2019. I can't believe the summer's almost over, but we're cooking it, and we've got some great beers in the house with us today. So our guests, we're going to go around the room. We have Torch and Crown, which is making a name for itself in the Bronx and soon to open with a tasting brew pub in Manhattan.
Hey, I'm Keith Sansone. I run sales over at Torch and Crown.
Great. And one of you, the owners, John, will be joining us shortly. And another guest from up in Poughkeepsie, New York.
I'm Cortland Towslowski. I'm the owner and head brewer of Kings Court Brewing Company.
So you guys, this is a lot of times we do a show based on who's in the room. And, you know, this is a pretty great group. So why don't you guys tell us your backstories about how you got in beer. Keith, I knew you as a beer rep. You've been reaching out for a while about getting on the show. So.
Yeah, a few years back, I was on a sales rep episode you did a couple of years ago, and I remember before I was in beer industry, I listened to you, so I was very excited about that. Now it's kind of come full circle. I got into beer sales a few years ago on the distribution side, and had the ultimate goal of joining a small craft brewery so I can really take ownership of what's going on and help spread tasty beer throughout the city here.
Well, that's great. And we're going to be drinking some Torch and Crown all night. And Cortland, so you're the surprise guest. It's great to have you on. Tell us your backstory.
I've been brewing beer for a long time. I started in high school with my dad, so it's kind of been this long 20-year process. Professionally, it's been about 8 years now. You know, started on the bottling line at Drake's. From there, became the head brewer at EJ Fair. Then I built Bear Bottle Brewing Company in San Francisco.
Out in California.
Yep, opened in San Francisco. At Drake's, in between, I did the Master Brewers program at UC Davis. And, you know, after you build a brewery and you're working for somebody, you know, you talk to your wife. And I think the logical next step is to open your own place. And, you know, coming back home, back east, it's definitely a little bit more affordable. So here we are.
Wow, so East Coast is more affordable than San Diego?
I mean, growing up in Connecticut, my wife grew up in Brooklyn, and, you know, we were actually in Oakland and San Francisco, so, you know, like, tomato, tomato. I think upstate New York is certainly more affordable. The Bay Area is certainly comparable to the city here.
Yeah, living in Manhattan, I beg to differ, but, you know.
So what do you guys have going on? How did you guys meet? So Torch and Crown and Kings Court.
So I know,
but this beer world, it makes a lot of good friends.
It's very close knit. I know.
So I actually met John and Joe. It was probably a year and a half, 2 years ago. I was helping out. Should I even say it? Lineup Brewing Company. I was helping brew their beers, and I think Beyonce was the last beer we did that everyone on the show may know. But I met them. I thought
that was a nice pills.
Thank you. I met them. I thought they were really cool guys. You know, they told me what they were doing. It was taking longer than they expected to open the place in Manhattan. They told me they bid on the brewery to buy it up there in the Bronx. And then as soon as they did, you know, I came, I saw it. I was like, wow, this is really big. This is cool. And then, you know, things just got going from there. We kept in touch, and now hopefully they're going to be helping me out with some distribution in the city here.
So Torch and Crown, so it was an existing space in the Bronx.
Yeah.
And but it's kind of a whole new brewery, isn't it?
I mean, the goal initially was and has always been to have a production facility in Manhattan, and that's what we're working on at the moment. When the old Chelsea Craft spot up in the Bronx went under, we put in a bid and ended up winning that bankruptcy auction. So our business model kind of took on a life of its own, and it's become very heavily focused on contract brewing for a number of partners that we basically have our tanks constantly full up there, all the while still building the Manhattan production facility down there. And then when that opens, we'll shift a significant portion of our production of our brand down to Manhattan, and that'll be our tap room where you can come visit, and then we'll keep the Bronx production.
So that's exciting. For me, that's a part of Manhattan that I know well. So tell us exactly where the Manhattan location is going
to
be.
The address is 12 Van Damme Street, and it used to be the old Van Damme Diner. So that's been defunct for a number of years.
This
now.
Is like where Soho meets Tribeca.
More or less, yeah.
Over it's, by the Holland Tunnel, yep, west
right
side
there,
Manhattan.
Right off the Spring Street C&E stop. So you actually get right off the
And your spot, used, it was the Van Damme Diner. If you know, there's an actor friend of mine, Maximilian Martini. He's been on some crazy action shows. Back in the 90s, he was good friends with the son of the Van Damme Diner owner. So I know I spent a lot of time there.
Yeah, it's
great
it's
location.
It's a cool spot. It's definitely pretty big, and you know, people ask us a lot, why would we pick Soho? Because it's certainly not the most affordable option in Manhattan. But you know, frankly, manufacturing
what's affordable
zones,
in Manhattan?
manufacturing zones are limited, so it ended up working out, and we actually it's a 3-floor space, and that's what kind of helps make it viable. The tap room is going to be on the top floor, and then we'll use the sub-levels for production and cellaring. So it should be, you know, very manageable with the amount of space that we have while keeping it, you know, open for guests to come in and hang out.
So you've been making some beers for your own label, Torch and Crown,
yes,
as well as contracting. So the plan, when you open the Manhattan location, what are some of the beers you're going to make first? Are you going to have flagships, or are you going to just be making small batch beers?
So we more or less have 3 flagships at the moment, and that's actually what I just poured for us here. We have 2 IPAs and a lager, which our plan is to produce year-round. We're most likely going to introduce some more of that lineup or adjust where we need to. But for the time being, since we basically launched our brand the beginning of the year, we have the Intersect IPA, which we're drinking now. It's a 5.1 session, and it's a rotating hop series. So every can has a new color and 2 new hops, just to play around with whatever's popular, whatever's fun, whatever we have lying around at the brewery. We can play around with how the hops interact with each other. And then we have Almost Famous, which is a New England 6.6% IPA. Citra Mosaic, a little bit of Chinook in there for good measure. Nice and hazy, nice and juicy.
And we'll taste the other ones.
Yeah,
that's a good start. That, I think, you know, IPAs, and I'm looking forward to what you guys do when you're open in Manhattan. And it's soon, right? In September, you might be
looking
open.
Looking at September, realistically. Who knows what's going to happen with the permitting in this city. They're already making our lives a nightmare. But, you know, realistically, this fall, aiming for September is definitely a realistic date.
Let's toast to that, because
cheers.
Manhattan needs a good brewery. Yeah. So, Cortland, your backstory. So, let's talk about Drake's Brewery. Tell us where it is in California, because I know quite a few brewers that cut their teeth there over many years now.
A lot of brewers cut their teeth there and then go on to open their own place. So, for me, it was a really good breeding ground. You know,
where is it?
It's in San Leandro, but, you know, Drake's...
That's like, is that Bay Area?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's in the Bay Area. It's just south of Oakland. But in Oakland, they also have the dealership. The same owners also own Triple Rock. They also own Jupiter. So there's like a lot of people in the Drake's community. And now they're opening a new brewery, I think, in Sacramento right now.
So one guest we had on many years ago, so there's a spot there called Faction Brewing,
yep,
in Alameda. Roger had come on the show many years ago. Apparently, he had come and bought the original Captain Lawrence brew system, came here to New York, and was going to drive it back out. Tell me about Faction Brewing, and did you have a connection through Drake's with him?
So when I started at Drake's, Roger was the head brewer of Triple Rock, which, again, is the same owner. So Triple Rock is a smaller system. He got to play for a lot of years, and then You know, he does a million IPAs. You go to Faction, he's probably got 20 IPAs on tap, and then he's got two other beers, a dark and a light. But it's a beautiful location. He certainly knows how to make great beer, and he's been doing it for a long time.
If anybody's out west, one beer I do want to try is Faction, so can send it here to Roberta's Pizza in Brooklyn.
And they're mainly clear IPAs, which is nice as well, so...
So you got you're a solid brewer,
throwing
man.
Some shade.
Throwing you know, some shade.
It's pretty cool that you are a solid brewer with this great background. You went to UC Davis too. I mean, how important do you think it is to have like a real solid? I mean, what was in your education? You got science. You've got.
Yeah, I mean, luckily for me, I was an environmental science major in college, so I had a lot of the science backgrounds. You know, being environmental studies because it was a liberal arts program at Skidmore, like. It was environmental chemistry, environmental biology. So I actually, when I went to apply to the Master Brewers program, they wouldn't accept it. So I had to go back to community college in Berkeley, and I had to retake O-Chem and inorganic chem. And that actually helped me a lot. I really enjoyed it, you know, relearning things at a later point of life. And then going back to the UC Davis program, I'd already been working at Drake's for about a year and a half. So I had that, like, okay, I'm dragging hoses around, you know, I'm wet, this is hard, my back hurts, and then to go and like learn the like book smarts and then apply it to real world practice, I think that's what helped me. Just going in the classroom, I think you lose something, or you haven't gained something yet, but to be able to apply the two together, I think was really beneficial for me.
What are a couple of things, like you can stump Keith, not me, because I won't know it. What are two things that you learned at UC Davis that you think every brewer should know? It can be a technical question or a science question.
Yeah, I took organic chemistry for one semester in college, so look out.
You're putting me on the spot. I don't like this. two things.
Start with one.
I mean, you learn everything. Let's be real. You learn from, like, you know, a barley seed to all of the layers of the kernel, when there are like five, all the way through germination, malting, kilning. I mean, you literally learn anything. So to say one thing, I think, is
so,
a little...
Okay, what about... Give me some science background. Clear versus hazy beer.
I mean, I don't think there's much science to that. I think it's just a lot of protein, you know, and certain people in the Bay Area, they just dry hop the hell out of their beers to put all the haze in. And most people, you know, they use these higher protein malts in there, be it wheat or oats or even unmalted wheat. I mean, some people have been using flour, which is the same thing as wheat, but, you know, science.
That's good. And what about science. Technology? So at UC Davis, are you working on like interesting state-of-the-art technology? Or is that something you encounter more through your work?
I think I encountered it more through my work. It's certainly, you know, the classroom is above the brewery. And, you know, we definitely, like, took apart a heat exchanger. You know, there was, like, a pilot brew system that you could brew on. But I was still brewing at Drake's on the weekends. So I was still working. So I would go to class during the week. And then, you know, on Saturday, I would go into Drake's and brew on my own. So learning about how a centrifuge ran, learning about how a DME filter ran properly, you know, those were important because I was doing those in practice at Drake's at the time. So to learn about it and then try and like use that knowledge to make the DME filter run properly so you don't clog it or you get, you know, higher flow through, that was important for me.
And near you, so in New Hyde Park, there's the Culinary Institute of America. You
yep.
know, Hutch.
Yep.
Hutch is up there with a CIA brewery. Yep. I mean, how does that program differ? So those are culinary students getting the chance to brew. Do you know what their course of study is compared to what you studied?
I've been to CIA a couple times, and I know Hutch certainly. What they study versus what I studied, I really don't know the difference, honestly. I certainly see the students in there looking through a microscope and cell counting, which I think is great, but I can't speak too much to...
All right, John's here. John, what's his last name? John D.
Dantzler.
John Dantzler's here from Torch and Crown, so we'll get to that. Keith, before John comes in, quick backstory. Tell us about John, because you're working for him.
John's the one who makes, he makes everything work. He makes everyone work in the brewery. So he's the business mind behind behind this whole scheme we're putting together. So he's the one that makes sure to put a foot in our ass if we're not making things happen. So
great. John, we gave you an intro, man. You got, we're talking about King's Court and Cortland's background. And welcome to the show, man. It's great to see you. Thanks for coming on, John. Just talking to the mic here.
So. Yeah, yeah.
Thanks for rushing over.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, sorry I'm late, guys. You know, running a brewery. You know what I mean?
That seems to be the word today is busy. People say that you're busy when you're running a brewery.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I kind of thought it would be like in Family Guy. You know, you just sit there and drink beer all day. But it turns out there's actually work to do.
No, I still do that, though.
So you guys all know each other pretty well. But
yeah, we do.
Tell me, going back, so you had wanted to open a brewery. The Chelsea Craft in Bronx was closing. Just tell us how you got that space. And it's a great story. I mean, you guys really have come on the scene. You're a difference maker. You're like the next, to me, you're the next step up in craft breweries in New York.
Yeah, well, at least pushing the geographical footprint a little bit. But, I mean, the brief story, Joe and I actually grew up right in the area. We got our fake IDs taken at a bar in the East Village when we were 16 years old. And so very next day, we could no longer buy beer. Figured we'd make it. Went out, bought a little Mr. Beer kit. The first time we used it, exploded it all over my mom's kitchen stove, and we both got grounded.
Now you're 18.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. These guys are kids.
Yeah, don't let the hairline fool you. But even worse than that, you know, the beer was terrible. And Joe being, it was always pretty, you know, pretty scientifically inclined. And us both being athletes, we were pretty competitive people. We had found something, making beer, that we loved that we weren't very good at. And we weren't going to let that continue. So got involved. We were living out in Jersey. In the kind of local New Jersey, New York homebrewing scene. Even back as 16-year-olds, people kind of, you know, turned a blind eye to that fact. And so by the time we were 18, we were making some pretty decent stuff. Not, you know, nothing to really brag about among professional brewers here, but, you know, enough that we thought there was a future there. And so by the time we were 18, we decided to open our own brewery together one day. And I think, you know, we've definitely done a lot of things wrong, but one of the best things we did was have the foresight to understand that neither of us, you know, had the background or had the understanding to pursue it then. And we would rather wait for the market to develop and wait for our own sort of, you know, to develop our own skill sets, frankly. And so Joe studied chemistry. He was, working at a distillery in Boston, moved out to Oregon, was brewing at Rogue, and most recently was down in Jersey at Kane, kind of running the show there, at least on the recipe side. And I was working in finance, so kind of getting, you know, getting the other side of things. And so that was when, in 2017, we both kind of decided that was the time. We quit our jobs. We raised some money to go out and start a brewery, and then looked around Manhattan, and turns out Manhattan real estate is you know not the easiest scene to navigate. So we were looking for a space in Manhattan. We kind of always, our vision was always bringing beer kind of right to the heart of the action. You know, it took us a while. We had kind of our own trials and tribulations. We looked at about 150 different places. We got sued out of a building. We had a few leases kind of ready to sign that ended up falling apart because of engineering and structural diligence. In the meantime, this facility up in the Bronx kind of, you know, we were hearing rumblings that it was going to come available. And this was in many ways a kind of big departure from our initial vision. You know, we're looking at kind of a tiny space right in the heart of things, and now instead we're going to get this massive warehouse in, you know, a much more industrial area in the outer boroughs.
It's like South Bronx, right?
Yeah, it's kind of, I guess, a little bit north of South Bronx. It's in the Tremont neighborhood, so just south of the, like, Arthur Ave, Little Italy section. And, yeah, I mean, you know, we... went and looked at the facility.
Can we call that your upstate location?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Torch upstate. Upstate. I like it.
It's on the mainland.
Cortland's looking down, right? Like, what?
Rest of New York City's islands. Long Island is Brooklyn and Queens. Staten Island's an island. Manhattan's an island. Bronx is the only
basically
part that's...
Basically anything above, like, Midtown is upstate to me. I, you know, before this, I rarely went above 14th Street. But yeah, you know, that, so we looked at all of this, this facility, obviously, you know, there was a lot of beauty to it in terms of how the brewery had actually been made. There was certainly a lot that we would have built differently, we'll say. And Joe and I kind of, you know, really, really took the time. It's funny, the court appointed guy who was running the asset sale, I think, was going to strangle us if we didn't end up being the buyers, because we had annoyed him so much poking around and, you know, climbing up to the roof to look at the glycol units and, you know, all of that. But we arrived at a vision for this space that we thought could do something really awesome within New York City, which was, you know, to serve as a contract brewer for breweries throughout New York, throughout, you know, kind of a localized version. So we started contract brewing right from the start. Literally the first day we took the place over, we are figuring the system out while brewing a Kelso Mosaic IPA, and took on some more clients, that, you know, we kind of partner alongside to brew their product, Alewife, Foreign Objects, some of the smaller New York City brands that, you know, we're able to give a little bit more of a distribution reach, Big Alice being one, and kind of, you know, other breweries that are all, you know, that are known for quality, that are known for sort of, I guess, they're having similar values from us, or similar values to ours from the product side.
And so you're
a little outside of the
people
city.
People know that you're making beer for other breweries.
Yeah.
And it's
common.
So some people... Do other people make beer with you and not say that they're making it there? I mean, how does that actually work?
I mean, I think most of our partners are pretty, you know, are pretty happy to talk about the partnership, about the, you know, about kind of how.
Well, you're
how
making
we
some really
together.
Good beer. I know, like Talia reached out to me and they say Keith, you said on the can, they actually say they make it.
Yeah, everyone has like a different opinion on the contract brewing. So some of our partners will just say brewed by their own company in the Bronx, and others will say brewed by Torch and Crown. Like, either way.
Are they technically brewing there, or your team's brewing it for them?
Well, it's our team, you know, turning the valves, but the recipe design comes from our partners, and we, you know, are very clear to, you know, to have our partners drive that process. So it's not like, hey, you know, make me a pale ale. I'll be up next Thursday.
I think you guys are the new wave, because to me this makes a lot of sense. I mean, how did you figure that out in the beginning? Because you bought a brewery, and how did this happen?
So it was a pretty simple kind of pretty simple and pretty linear thought process, which was, all right, we're going to go from 0 barrels capacity to 12,000 barrels capacity overnight.
Simple.
You like that, Cortland?
Pretty simple. So, you know, how are we going to best utilize those? And we knew, all right, we're Torch and Crown. We don't really have a brand, a product, a space, anything until that day. We weren't going to get out there and sell 12,000 barrels of our own. And so, you know, how essentially the question to us was, here's this facility with, you know, with incredible potential, how do we best use that? And so this was kind of the model that we settled on.
So who was doing that? Was you and Joe got people to, like, I know you mentioned Kelso. I remember seeing you a year and a half ago at New York City Brewers Guild meetings.
Yeah.
So you just put yourself out there and.
Yeah. I mean, I think it was, you know, Joe and I have been kind of trying to build these relationships, really, I mean, for years, way, well before this happened. And so I think, you know, I think it's the reputation and kind of, you know, talent base that Joe has built up first and foremost, that that enabled people to feel comfortable coming? Because, I mean, you know, the stigma around contract brewing is that it's just this completely, you know, you're taking the soul out of craft beer, right? It's like, here's this process that you are, you know, that you put your heart and soul into in your own facility, and then you're just going to get some industrial batch made somewhere, you know, just like they make Hostess muffins or whatever. And so, you know, I think the most important side for us, and again, like, you know, we try to attract the brands that aren't just brands. People try to attract the partners that, you know, that have, that really care about the product, frankly, that way more than just sort of the label. And so, you know, making those calls, it was down to our own network, and it was in kind of, you know, we knew that anyone who was looking for contract space, or who was looking for excess capacity and kind of in whatever form, could talk to Joe and could talk through our process and how we run our team, how we run kind of, you know, our actual machinery, and feel good about it in that, like, these are guys who care about what they're making as much as we do.
So I was in the contract brewing world for a while at EJ Fair. You know, I started there, and I think we were doing like 1,200 barrels a year, and I left after 14 months, and we were doing 5,000 barrels a year, and it was all mainly contract. And I will say that if you're a good brewer, it's not hard to find people that want to brew with you. So to look at their facility now and see how many new tanks are coming in, clearly they're making good beer, and people want them to brew the beer for them.
So we had talked with Cortland earlier about Poughkeepsie and Kings Court. Tell us about how you found that location and you opened there. Because, I mean, there's so much going on in the Hudson Valley. And this is a great show today because we have like New York City and we have Poughkeepsie, and you guys are working
upstate
together.
And then upstate.
Yeah, I'm up upstate, yeah. So we knew we were going to leave California. We knew we were going to leave the Bay Area. You know, we sold our home. It was sold. I had been coming out here talking with Katarina at Lineup. Do I want to partner with him, with her? And I was for a little bit. And then at some point, it was just like, you know what? Like, the city's crazy. Like, I'm delivering kegs in my Toyota Camry. It's the winter. Going down those steps, like, into the basement underground. I was like, this isn't for me.
Oh, yeah. I have that moment every week doing deliveries.
I'm like, am I going to fall down and, like, I'm going to be in the hospital? It is what it is. So Caroline and I, you know, her parents have a country home up near Hudson. And so we were, like, looking around Hudson. We were going to all the breweries in the area, just introducing ourselves. Hey, we want to open up a spot. Like, do you have any places in mind? Like, what's going on? And we actually had a lease in hand in Hudson, but then our friends at Plan B Brewery, they emailed us and they were like, hey, these guys at the old Kings Court Hotel, they gutted it. It's completely brand new. They asked us if we wanted to do a second location. And they're like, we're not ready for that. But, you know, you guys mentioned you were interested, so here's these people's information. So Caroline, my wife, and I, we went to the Kings Court Hotel, the old one. It's now called 40 Cannon Street. And we met with the owners, and the mayor of Poughkeepsie's there, and Dutchess County Tourism's there. And, like, everyone's there in that room. And I'm, like, I'm in ripped jeans and a T-shirt. And I'm just, like, and we're with our one-year-old daughter at the time. And we're, like, what the heck is going on? Like, we did not expect this. But he showed me the space. You know, we all shook hands. They had the Bear Bottle website up because that was the last brewery I built and ran. And, you know, they're, like, talking about it. And then they showed me the space, and it's just this, like, bombed out, burned out room with just, like, wood everywhere, plaster everywhere. You know, the brick is black. You know, everything's boarded up. And I'm looking at it, and he tells me the price. And he, you know, the owner of the building's a licensed general contractor, licensed plumber, licensed electrician. He has some workers that can help me at his cost. And I'm just like, we can make this work. We can make this work. So literally I left there, and I think that night I emailed Jim, the owner, and I was like, I'm going to take it. Like, this is cool.
Yeah, it's great. It's like two different worlds, right? You go 2 hours north of Poughkeepsie versus Manhattan. We're going to take a short break right now. We'll be back in a minute, and we'll talk more about what Torch and Crown is going to be doing in Manhattan on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Well, This episode is brought to you by charlottesgotalot.com. The Queen City is a food lover's paradise and hosts to hundreds of incredible events throughout the year, including the International Symposium on Bread at Johnson & Wales University. HRN went to this year's symposium to learn about the science, history, and art of bread making. Here's what visitors had to say about the symposium.
I love the geeky science stuff.
Great food. Love the Armenian pizza.
How much I'm eating and consuming the carbs.
The most interesting thing is just the community.
For me, it's the science of starters.
So much information.
Very inspiring so far because everybody has a different outlook.
I'm not technically a breadhead, but I think I'm going to be one after being here.
So whether you're a breadhead or just a curious mind, check out HRN on Tour for coverage of Charlotte's International Symposium on Bread and an insider's look into Charlotte's food scene. Don't miss our interview with Peter Reinhardt and Kristen Moore to learn more about where to eat on your next trip to Charlotte, a city on the rise. Learn more at charlottesgotalot.com.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Hey, guys, it's July 30th. It's the middle of summer, and we're drinking some good beers. Keith from Torch and Crown, what's the second beer we're drinking?
Second beer we're drinking is called Slightly Sour. It's a wit recipe brewed with lemon zest and lemons. So the lemon juice there adds a little bit of acidity and tartness, making it slightly sour. But it's just really easy drinking, 4% wheat ale with a little bit of lemon to it.
So John and Keith, so you guys, you're in the process of kind of building your brand. So when you took over the brewery, you didn't really have a brand or sales yet. Mm-hmm. So how long have you been making your own label beers?
Not very long, just since about February of this year. entire first year we were operating the facility was pure as a pure contract brewing facility, and it was really only when we came a little bit closer to opening our Manhattan location that we launched our own brand kind of in retail and in distribution. We wanted to build up a presence sort of specifically targeting downtown, specifically targeting, again, the heart of the action. That's kind of part and parcel
so let's
with
talk
our
about
location.
It. Keith told us earlier, I know where it is. I know the old Van Damme Diner.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like Soho, Tribeca.
Uh-huh. We ripped those awnings down this week, actually.
So how'd you find that space? And tell us a little bit about, you're opening a brewery in Manhattan. It's very exciting.
Yeah, yeah. So we, this was, I guess, early 2017, we set out to do this. So we looked at, like I said, way too many locations. I'm probably, I would say, one of the foremost experts in sub-cellar basements in lower Manhattan at this point. I've seen quite a bit. But, obviously, finding a space that's right for a brewery is difficult. Even, taking the city element out of it, it's difficult. Things have to be structurally able to hold all these heavy tanks and have the floors sort of beat up with all the, industrial machinery. Utilities have to be perfect. There has to be, in order to receive materials, send beer out, there has to be good ways to get in and out, to get, pallets, forklifts, all that good stuff. Ideally, you have a loading dock, kind of all of these different things. And so no matter where you are, looking for a site is usually a game of compromise, is kind of, all right, utilities are perfect. This may need some work or,
There's always compromise.
There's always compromise. And when we were looking, I mean, it's kind of laughable looking back at sort of some of the conversations, some of the compromises that we really considered, where looking back, like, no fucking way we could have made that happen. Sorry, am I allowed to swear here?
You just did. Okay.
I am now.
The gentleman brewery owner.
Yes, correct.
Only gentleman.
Correct. We're sophisticated around here.
But Van Damme, so you're going to be brewing beer there. Are you going to be brewing how many different styles? Like, what's the setup going to be?
Yeah, so this space,
tap room.
This space is, you know, I mentioned we looked at around 150 different spaces, and this is the one that was as close to zero compromise as possible, even down to having a loading dock, a dedicated freight elevator, you know, ability to move things from the brew, the actual, you know, brew house in the basement, out into trucks, out of the building without disturbing the tap room. I mean, it's really perfect from all areas, and not to mention our neighbors upstairs are all kind of, you know, new kind of techie type, you know, startup vibe type companies that, you know, are people that, that really, have already demonstrated quite a bit of interest in our product and sort of, you know, in supporting kind of what we're trying to do. But so the actual setup, we have, about 3,000 square foot outdoor beer garden. That's that old alleyway just to the left of the Van Dam Diner. If you're looking at it, we're doing a bit of a, you know, bit of a conversion there. And then, we've partnered with the Cannibal Group, the Cannibal restaurant up on 29th Street.
Christian.
Yeah, Christian, exactly. So he's joined us to kind of guide the hospitality side.
Wow, that's going to be exciting then.
Oh, yeah.
This is news to me. I didn't know this. So
yeah,
Christian, the Cannibal, before they had Resto, Good Beer Seal Place, great leader in food and beer.
He's been a great leader in food and beer for, you know, over a decade.
They opened out in California, too, I think.
Yeah. So,
well, this is news. Thank you for bringing that to the show.
To add him to the team. I mean, you know, when you have a chance to add the Cannibal, you know, to add his talent, his experience, it's tough to say no. But, you know, especially given that Joe and I have very little experience on the actual restaurant side, you know, it was about aligning with the right people. And
so it's Torch and Grounds on Van Dam.
Yep.
In Soho, lower Soho area.
Yep.
So how many seats? What's the space going to be like?
Yeah, I mean, between inside and outside, I mean, I don't want to give a number and then have DOB tell me. but it's going to be around 200 inside and probably equal outside. So, I mean, it's a decent amount of space. We have some of our bright tanks, 10-barrel bright tanks and 30-barrel fermenters, right on the ground floor. So you're immersed in a brewery when you come, kind of whether you want to be or not. Right. And then, in the basement is where the actual 10-barrel brew house will go. A lot more tanks, a lot more kind of process stuff. And then that's also where we'll have a dedicated 75-seat private event space. So anything from corporate events to rehearsal dinners to
John, at this stage in the game, it seems that you guys, when I'm talking about the new wave and craft breweries, it sounds like you guys have a pretty good sense of what to do.
I think the day I say that is we're going to fail tomorrow.
No, they definitely know what to do.
We're constantly learning, but I think, you know, the theme in kind of, you know, in what we're doing both from the production location, you know, upstate, as we've said, and the space down in Manhattan is just trying to get ourselves as close to the people who are drinking our beer as possible.
So, Keith, you know, I've known you for years selling beer and the beer scene. I mean, what's exciting to you about this whole Torch and Crown project?
It's there's a lot going on. It's very different than any other position I had prior in selling beer, because I'm not alone in the company where I have to wear every hat that possibly exists. I'm out there lugging kegs, going into basements, risking my life dealing with some of these hatches out there, from routing deliveries to running social media. I've always hated social media, but there you go. If you like the Instagram post, you're welcome. I try not to use too many filters, but what can you do?
There's some good photos at Torch Crown Beer.
At Torch Crown Beer. Yeah. So, you know, I've been able to really take ownership of so many different things in the brewery. So that's been the most exciting part. And getting to be hands-on with everything is what's neat. And, you know, we're building something awesome here. So this
Manhattan location is pretty. So for you, Cortland, you know, seeing this, it sounds like, have you brewed in the space in the Bronx with
no,
these guys?
You seem
really familiar with these guys.
I don't brew my beer there at all. All my beer is brewed up in Poughkeepsie at my brewery. But I've certainly seen the space. I was there today. They're going to start distributing my beer once permits go through and all that. But I definitely come down hopefully once a week and check it out and see all the growth.
It sounds like there's like the Torch Crown mastermind here. Let's talk about this. So earlier Creed had said that there's a Night Shift up in Massachusetts has a model of they're a brewery, but they also distribute.
Yep.
Tell me about that. And then also, Cortland, well, let's talk about that first. Tell me about who wants to talk about Night Shift, the model sure. they have.
Sure.
That's new to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I think was born of necessity. Just, you know, the three-tier model is broken, and I think people have differing opinions on how to fix it. Obviously, everyone has their own little angle to take, probably myself included, so there will be some fair amount of bias here. But, you know, I mean, this is something that this three-tier model, and for those uninitiated, that means producers have to sell to distributors who then sell to retailers. It's something that was put in place state by state immediately following Prohibition, and the reason for that was to so that producers couldn't own the full channel. It was kind of to, ironically, to eliminate criminal activity, although I would argue that most distributors today are as close to organized crime as you can get. So, you know.
And certain large producers are buying all the distributors now. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. There's some terrible, I mean, there's bad acting going on from the distributor side of things. And it now it's going state by state. Different states are modernizing their laws, saying, you know what, you're allowed to self-distribute. If you're a small brewer, you don't have to get locked up with one of these.
So what does Night Shift do?
So basically, you know, I mean, Night Shift's whole thing was like, in first, as they started, they were
we know their beers in Massachusetts.
They were looking for distribution, and any distributor, I think they weren't happy with any of the distributors, but if they were to sign on to even have them deliver one keg, they were locked in. You know, there's this thing called franchise law where you're locked in basically until the distributor wants to fire you. And so what that leads to, which is never. And so what that leads to is just distributors are incentivized to stuff their portfolios with brands that they don't care about at all. And if a brand does happen to take off, awesome. They own all the upside. And if it doesn't, well, whatever. They're not competing against it because it's stuffed in the back of their portfolio and it's something they don't sell or give any attention to. So it's the balance of power is completely in distributors' hands. So Night Shift has said, you know what? We're going to distribute alongside of our own beer. We already have the trucks going out. We're already self-distributing. We're going to slap on some kegs from, you know, some of our friends who are making beer of similar quality, who are, you know, kind of like-minded, and we're going to say to hell with this whole franchise law thing.
So if I was in Massachusetts, I could get, through Night Shift, I could get three or four different breweries with one delivery.
Yeah, exactly.
Same
just
mindset.
Just like any other distributor. But the key difference is that Night Shift is saying, you know what, we're incentivized to keep you happy because if we don't, you can leave us. Whereas, other distributors, you're locked in through this franchise law thing. You literally have to pay an amount of money that will always be greater than.
So in New York, if this is a plan you guys are thinking of,
yeah.
How are you going to act it out here?
Well, I mean, so New York City, brewing beer in New York City logistically is one of the craziest and arguably dumbest things that you can do. But one of the beautiful things that we have. You know, that we have in our favor.
You like Poughkeepsie, don't you?
Well, he's calling himself dumb is what he's doing.
We always, you know, ambitious to the point of stupidity has been our calling card so far. But, you know, one of the
Keith, you going to print that on Instagram?
I might have to put it on my business card.
Yeah, I like that. Trademark that. One of the beautiful things about the city is just the population density, both of, you know, establishments like this that will sell our beer, as well as density of consumers. And so our idea is to take a much more localized version of what Night Shift's doing. I mean, Night Shift's gotten massive, so I don't even want to compare myself to them at all. But, you know, with King's Court is a perfect example. We've known Cortland really since he moved. Since he moved back to the East Coast, he and Joe have you know, had in-depth brewing conversations over plenty of beers. We know we're kind of kindred spirits in a lot of ways from the actual production side of things. When we did take over the Bronx space, Cortland was one of the first guys we called and, you know, to come say, hey, how would you help us fix these problems? So you know, that we have this history to then say, all right, well, Cortland, he's a small brewery up in Poughkeepsie. It's not going to be economically viable for him to buy a truck, to hire a salesperson, to hire a distributor, you know, like to go do all this stuff. But at the same time, he doesn't want to ally with, or maybe, you know,
I don't want to ally.
He likely, you know, may not want to ally with one of these big distributors in the city, who frankly have so many brands in his portfolio that even if they do care about him, which, in it, you know, would be a huge step, they might end up not being a good steward of his brand. So for us, you know, that's a perfect opportunity to say, look, we got the trucks running already. We have, you know, we have Keith moving our own product. Hopefully, if we're doing things correctly, we're known for a certain, you know, being of a certain level of quality. So let's bring you alongside.
So
us.
Already now, in less than 6 months, you guys, how many accounts are you in, Keith? What are some of the places I can get Torch and Crown now?
We just passed the 160 mark, which is exciting.
160 accounts?
Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah,
great work, guys.
I mean, I make sales visits while I'm making all the deliveries, so keep me fit. I had to cancel the gym membership because it was too much at that point. We've been growing kind of outward from the taproom space. Doing as much business development as I can, but just kind of growing relatively organically from Manhattan outward. I do have a lot of connections and people I've known throughout the five boroughs that anyone asks, I'm going to bring the beer. But you name the craft beer bar in Manhattan, it's there. And then that's increasing in the Bronx, Queens, and Brooklyn. Haven't driven out to Staten Island yet.
We posted
we'll
on
get
Instagram, and you got a lot of friends in the Bronx.
Yeah.
Bronx Beer Hall. And then you have one more beer. Let's tap that. And Cortland, we're going to have to wrap it up. But you said, you told me about a beer you were making with, was it Currents or something?
Yeah. I mean, the one thing about being upstate.
So Kings Court, Poughkeepsie, that's a place I want to check out too.
It's one thing about being actual upstate is there's farms everywhere. And when your farmer friend just randomly shows up with, last year he showed up with like 300 pounds of peaches. This year he's like, yo, I've got 500 pounds of red currants. They're ready now. You're kind of like, okay, I need to brew next week and do something with this. So, you know, it's kind of fun. You get all your local regulars together. You have a bunch of beers. Everyone's de-stemming these red currants. And then we made a couple beers with them. So we got a dark tart coming out. And then another in our sour series. It's
going to be right now, where sour. Can we get your beers? Just in Poughkeepsie?
So we self-distribute all over the Hudson Valley. My wife does all of that. And then we just started coming down to the city 2 weeks ago and meeting people, you know, in an effort to launch this New York City push. So the Baroness just had 10 beers on tap last week.
Long Island City, yeah.
Malt and Mold took a beer. And then this week, Alphabet City took another beer as well.
Well, congratulations, guys. We're going to have to wrap it up soon. Last thing, what's the last beer that we have, Keith?
This is Almost Famous. This is, if we were to call it a flagship, this is our flagship IPA. New England, 6.6%, Citra Mosaic. Nice and juicy. Good bitterness in the back to round it out. So,
and John, anything you want to say to wrap it up?
Yeah, I mean, Almost Famous, this was the first beer that we launched, so kind of making fun of ourselves a little bit on that. But, you know, look out for us. I think it's something both from the, you know, there's this element of immersing ourselves right in the city, getting ourselves, you know, right into the sort of, you know, the heart of the action, but also bringing, you know, whether it's through our partner brewing program or through this kind of, you know, friendly distribution model, we'll call it, that we're going to try to embark on next. There's an element of kind of trying to bring everybody with us. And so, you know, New York, I think has a lot more growth in terms of getting people really excited about beer, getting people to understand our process and why we're so passionate about it, frankly.
I think there's a lot of growth ahead in New York.
Yeah. So it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a wild journey for sure. But, you know, it's we just started and
well, cheers, guys.
Almost Famous, man.
Keith, John, and Cortland, thanks for joining me here on the Heritage Radio Network. Big shout out to our team, producer Justin Kennedy, assistant producer Leah Pops, engineer Matt Patterson. I'm Jimmy Carboni. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food Radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.